Hi, it's Brock Romanek over at thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Kevin O'Keefe, who's president of LexBlog, and Kevin doesn't know it, I think he does know it, but I'm a big fan, but also more than a fan. I read his blog constantly because Kevin blogs about blogging and how lawyers should be blogging more and be their own bloggers, and so it's a topic, obviously, I have a keen interest in since I've been blogging myself for over 5 years, and it's changed my life to some extent. And so I thought I'd have Kevin on to talk about how it might change yours. And the first question for you, Kevin, is why should corporate lawyers blog?
Yeah, I think that what many people realize, people do not realize when they start to blog, is the networking component to it. Beginning to blog puts yourself out there, and you start to form relationships with people that have similar interests. So if you're a corporate lawyer, one of the things you want to be able to do is be the informed buyer of legal services, and you're doing those things already by building relationships with lawyers that a corporate lawyer may be hiring, may be using in certain matters for the corporation. What I've seen in the case of corporate counsel that are blogging, they're starting to form relationships with legal counsel that are out there on niche subjects. For example, if a corporate lawyer is out there on the blogosphere, it puts them out where they're going to start to have their content, if you will, cited on some of these niche blogs for something that they had to say. It's going to make it more likely that they're going to be building up relationships with these people that begin to cite their content. It's an ongoing discussion. I equate blogging as something closer to a Rotary meeting than having a website, let's say. And the Rotary meeting just happens to have people that have your particular interest. Reading blogs is certainly advantageous in and of itself, but I think if you take the additional step out there where you said, hey, I'm one of you, I think you're going to find that those relationships are a little bit stronger. I think you're going to find that information comes into you by email that you wouldn't have necessarily picked up by blogs. I think you're going to find the ability to drop somebody an email quickly on an issue that you have will be much more available to you than if you were just reading blogs.
So how does a lawyer figure out whether they have what it takes to become a blogger? That's a question I often get.
You know, I think that anybody can blog. Nobody's going to do a good job of it or what they perceive to be a good job when they first start. It's like anything else. I mean, even LexBlog, where we're helping lawyers begin to blog, you know, for us to say, hey, here's a beautiful set of skis, and this is how you ski, and can't you see how it's done, and we're going to push you off the edge, and it's going to be wonderful. If they've never skied before, it's just not going to be a wonderful experience the first day that they start. But after they do it a while, or after they ride that bike a while, it becomes very second nature. I think that what lawyers have to lose sight of a little bit is that it doesn't always have to be in legalese. You still have to be professional, no doubt, but you don't always have to be stuffy or couch yourself in legalese. Now, some of the issues you're going to be talking about are certainly legal intensive. There may be certain regulations, maybe certain case law. There could be certain terms, provisions that are going to be in an agreement. You know, how somebody looks at a certain situation in a certain jurisdiction. I mean, that's all very legally intensive. There isn't any doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that the content needs to be written or couched in the same way that you'd write a legal memorandum to a judge. It's totally different. A good blog post can be something that's two or three paragraphs long, often taking a block quote from something else, so where you're providing your value add to the discussion. Oftentimes what lawyers then look at is they say, well, wait a second, then a blog is just me too, or I said this about that type of thing. And that isn't necessarily true. If that good corporate counsel went to a conference where there were very good lawyers on a particular subject that they have an interest in, maybe it was on certain telecom issues that they wanted to be able to follow, and some of the leading telecom lawyers were presenting, there may be a panel of three or four lawyers at that table. A question may come from the audience. Those lawyers at the table are going to respond in such a way that they're going to reference what the other lawyer had just said. And there's nothing wrong with them saying, that's interesting what they said, here's my take, here's my value to that. And the people that are observing this content are going to get the value add from that. And that's a little bit what blogs are like. Now, that discussion component and how you get engaged in this river of discourse, if you will, is something that will come to you over over a period of time, because it's only natural. You know, if somebody were to put in front of a corporate lawyer some information that would be of interest to them because they had some expertise on that subject, they're going to have some reaction to that. It's only natural. And they may express their reaction in a couple of sentences. That's a good blog post in many cases. And the person that just wrote about that, that you referenced, through the technology, they're going to hear you. And as far as your style itself, it's going to be bad in the beginning compared to what you want it to be later. That's how I felt. But, you know, I picked up a phrase from somebody that wrote the weblog handbook, and it said you can write bad, but for only so long. And, you know, I think that applies well to blogging.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about, or in my own experience, you know, definitely found my voice. It took me a while, and then I think even then my voice has changed, and that is sort of the tone of my blogs or even the style that I write them. But what, following up on that, what are the elements of a blog that you think will attract an audience?
I think what you want to overcome is the fact, thinking back from a conceptual standpoint, if you went into this Rotary meeting, let's say, of only those people that had an interest in this telecom legal issue or specific issue in the telecom legal industry, maybe it was lawyers, maybe it was prospective clients of those lawyers, maybe it was the trade media that covered that issue, you wouldn't walk into that room where those people were, you know, socializing or networking with a bullhorn and begin to talk. You just wouldn't even think of doing that, and then shouting out legal content on telecom issues. You would look like an idiot. You would feel like an idiot. Well, you have to look at blogging as that same way, that the listening component is as important, if not more important, than the talking component or the writing component, because there's already a discussion going on every niche subject that there is imaginable. And so some unique subject, going back to this telecom issue, is already being written about, whether it's on blogs, whether it's in industry magazines, whether it's in the mass media. By referencing that type of discussion, other people are going to see that you've now put yourself out there, and they're going to begin to comment on what you say. So it isn't really just the elements of the blog that are most important. It's having the conception as to where you fit in the world. The other thing that I think is very important when people begin to blog is to begin with the end in mind. You know, where do I see this blog taking me in the next 18 months or 2 years? You know, what is it going to mean to me? If I'm corporate counsel, is it going to allow me to have gone from my network of 10 lawyers who I feel like I have a relatively close relationship to 200? Is that a good goal? If that's what you want to accomplish, so you have that bond with those type of people that are regularly providing you information and you can interact with, that could be pretty good. You know, if it's a lawyer out in private practice, it may be that I would like to do a particular type of work for these type of clients. Well, then figure out how you're going to get there. Now, your blog isn't going to do that entirely on its own, but it can play a big role in that. And the other elements, when you get down to key elements, that are just very important are, one, that you organize your content in two categories, because nobody cares about what you blogged on a particular date. I don't care what a lawyer blogged about on July 7th. But for whatever reason, law firms, law blogs, you know, whatever newsletters are archived by date, like people would go to CNN and look for content by date. You also want to have information there that clearly says about who you are, what is it that you do, and your contact information. Because all that's really important for people that are going to reference your content in other places, whether they're other bloggers or whether they're reporters that may want to contact you.
And what are your favorite blogs? You got to ask that question. It's just the subject of a Wall Street Journal article, which claimed that blogs have been around 10 years, which I don't quite buy. That's an expansive definition of a blog.
You know, it's a really good question, and I don't even think of them. You know, certain names come to mind, you know, in the legal arena that, you know, I look at Bob Ambrosi, I look at Carolyn Elephant. But most of the way that I consume content is by feeds, harnessing the feed of content that may come from a blog that I identify in particular, or I'll just monitor keywords and key phrases that'll come because I can subscribe to those keywords and key phrases. So I may not even be familiar with a particular blogger, if you will, but still see their content. And then the big area that I monitor is outside the legal arena, because I think they stretch my imagination a little bit. And if we were to follow the way that lawyers had done things from a technology standpoint, innovative standpoint, alone, we'd be left with all the other lawyers, which is where most of them are. And so I, you know, would read blogs from people that most people would not read, Steve Rubell, Robert Scoble, David Weiner, Doc Searles, these people that stretch my imagination as to the fact that, you know, marketing, if you will, is a discussion. What does that mean? You know, what are the new ideas that are going on? What are the new conferences going on? What are they talking about? And those are beyond the legal arena itself. Right. But all of those principles that they used are directly attributable to the legal profession.
And I like the way on your blog how you've linked on the bottom left corner to a bunch of sample blogs that are worthwhile taking a look at to see their style and their voice and how they've done it.
Yeah, and it's hard for, you know, I think the way that people have consumed things historically have been to click around and to read certain, let's say, magazines. So we've looked at the Internet as a repurposing of the publishing industry. And if there had not been the publishing industry before there was the Internet and blogs, we wouldn't be consuming content the same way. It just wouldn't have come to us this way. So what's now happening is we're producing content faster than we can realistically consume it. But there's people like us that are working very, very hard at developing new mediums for the consumption of that content, you know, because some people are already getting their news via a news reader. They're setting their antennas to the right channels that they want to read. They're setting their antennas to the right channels of words that they want to follow. Maybe there's a particular regulation that they want to follow. They're going to see what's ever being written on that. They've narrowed down to a very narrow element of news that they're going to follow, but they're not going to click around the Internet to get that content. Now, to some people, that isn't going to make a whole lot of sense as to how to do that or to how to harness those tools, and it's going to be up to companies to come up with methods to serve up that content in a meaningful way, and to do it in a way that they can engage those readers, to not only let the readers, you know, engage with the reporters, if you will, or the bloggers, but actually to harness some of their community members' or readers' content, you know, whether it be in content or blog posts or whatever. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting time ahead. Those people that think that that blogs have been around for a while and they may be on the decline are pretty short-sighted, and then probably that same discussion went on after the telephone was out there for 6 or 7 years and lawyers discussed the fact that it would probably be a fad and go away. It certainly hasn't, and I think that'll be the case with blogs being the third pillar of the Internet. We have email, we have websites, and we'll have blogs. And you will see in the lawyer's V-card or alongside the V-card on their websites, you'll see their email address, you'll see their telephone number, and then you'll see their blog. And that way people can size up a lawyer's philosophy by reading how they address certain issues.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks very much for your time. This is very informative.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kevin.